The name Imelda Marcos can evoke a wide range of reactions, from revulsion at her role in the oppressive regime of her husband, Ferdinand Marcos, to jokes about shoe hoarding, disco hopping, and all sorts of other cartoonish activities. A new show called Here Lies Love, conceived and created by David Byrne, is a fully immersive theatrical experience that is both an intimate portrait of this extremely controversial couple in Filipino politics and a very danceable disco musical, or should I call it a pop opera. It's received rave reviews and some awards along the way, and its run at the Public Theater has just been extended through July 28th. And I'm very pleased to welcome David Byrne and Ruthie Ann Miles, who plays Imelda Marcos, the former First Lady of the Philippines, to our program today. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
David, as far as I can tell, you've written thousands of songs over the course of your career. Have you counted?
I haven't counted, but I'll take that.
Yeah. But as I understand it, this production actually started out as a concept album. Did you imagine that it would be produced as a theatrical piece from the start?
I always hoped that it would be, although I initially imagined that it would be a kind of theatrical event that was held in a dance club, in a disco, that you would turn a disco into a sort of a theater. In a little way. Instead, it turned out the other way around.
Although this does try to capture the disco feeling.
Yes, this one, the theater, has been turned into a kind of a discotheque.
Mm-hmm. Well, your career often has veered from being a straight performer, I don't know what word I want to use there, because it always seemed to me to be on a slightly higher level, but into performance art. So was this a logical step to also write something for musical theater?
I don't know if it was a logical step, but it was a step that as soon as I took it, I was thrilled with writing the songs.
Do you think of it as an opera, the songs arias?
Well, they're very much pop songs. They're not in that tradition. As far as the way they're sung or the kind of music, they're very much pop songs, very catchy and danceable, most of them anyway. But in the sense that there's almost no dialogue, and that the songs and the staging, acting, all that tells the story, yeah, there's a certain similarity to other forms.
How did you choose Imelda Marcos as your subject? Had you considered other U.S.-backed autocrats as potential subjects?
When I read some years ago that she loved going to dance clubs, to discos, so much that she had a mirror ball installed in her New York townhouse. She converted the rooftop of the palace in Manila into a kind of club. And I thought, this woman surrounds herself with this music in this world. All the time. This is the soundtrack to her life, and maybe that's significant. And I thought maybe that should be the soundtrack of a story, if there is a story.
She spent a lot of time hanging out at Studio 54 around the same time that you were playing at CBGB.
Yes, it was not quite the same world. But
Ruthie, Imelda Marcos loved disco music, as yes. we pointed out, and dance clubs. I understand that she sang at every opportunity. She just loved to sing. Did you do a lot of research to find out about her?
You know, my research came after auditioning for Here Lies Love, I have to be honest, during the audition process, and then definitely once they gave me the part. And then I had to look past kind of the funny Imelda, look past the hair, look past the shoes. Who is this person? Now, the first workshop that we did, it was the younger Imelda going up until meeting Ferdinand Marcos. So there was a lot that I had to research in there, because not too much of that is known about her. But you've got to see David's research packet, like just his books, the boxes of books, and just the resources that he has to give. And so that's where a lot of my research has come.
Well, it doesn't hurt that you bear a certain resemblance to Imelda Marcos.
So I hear.
Well, because that is sometimes a problem where we have somebody playing a well-known person, and she doesn't look, or he doesn't look anything like that person. Mm-hmm. When you come out as Imelda, we just accept you as Imelda from the start. I don't know if you ever heard her sing. Do you sound like Imelda?
I've only heard her speaking through interviews. I've not heard her sing. But I do know that she's got these cheekbones and she's very, very tall. So I'm not very, very tall. I'm maybe 5'5", but they put me in these really tall heels, and then hopefully with the hair and the, you know, maybe it all works together.
Are you wearing wigs, or is that, do they change your hair throughout the play?
Yeah, we do add a little bit at the end to make it really full, but it's all my hair.
It's called a rat, isn't it? Yeah.
We do. We call it the rat.
Do we know that's
a technical term?
Do we know what her favorite artists were? I would assume ABBA and people like that.
No, well, I don't know, but I know that there were some Filipino songs that she liked to sing in Tagalog, as well as kind of probably the club songs. And one of them, in a loose translation, means is like, because of you, or it's all for you, that kind of thing, which was kind of became this motif throughout the show. Mm-hmm. She doesn't sing the song in that song in the show, but I thought, okay, that's really an important sentiment mm-hmm. for her.
And we mention that phrasing a lot. I do it for you. I do it all for you. It's for you.
So yeah, it comes over and over again in different situations.
Mm-hmm. Do you also do a lot of dancing?
In the show?
Yeah.
In the show, you know what? I got Annie B will tell you, she's our choreographer. I have begged her, please, Annie B, put me in more dance numbers. And every time they do, Alex takes me out of them. He said, Imelda wouldn't dance that. Imelda wouldn't do this. So I do get one tango number that I do a little bit of.
But you move.
Oh, yeah.
And you've worked little things. Ruthie has incorporated little bits of dance in. Like in Please Don't.
Am I about to get in trouble here?
No, I don't think so. You've been doing it for a while, but like in Please Don't, you have the stuff where you join the girls.
I copy a little bit of, we have clips of Imelda dancing, so I copy those and try to incorporate it into my person.
David, did you and Fatboy Slim, who worked with you on the music, want the songs to be music that Imelda might have wanted to dance to?
Yeah, I certainly did. Mm. At least I imagined that. I thought, let's make it sort of believable that if this person is or was immersed in this world, let's make it believable that these really are the kind of songs, and they would have sounded if she could have had a song written in that genre that expressed her feelings at a particular point in her life, that's the way it would sound.
You also have a DJ who's trying to get the audience to dance along. Ben Brantley of the New York Times said, this is music created to sweep you into unthinking acquiescence, as history is said to do. Do you see disco or disco music as a metaphor for the Marcos regime?
Well, I see it as a... I certainly agree that the music has this hedonistic vibe and feeling, and it's the music is seductive. Mm-hmm. It's not. I'm not saying that just about my music. I just mean like mm-hmm.
this. Well, you have to tap your feet.
Yeah, this mm-hmm. dance music in general. It's very kind of seductive. It's sweet. It does sweep you along. And I thought, this is to me that was really important. You have to feel what the excitement and the thrill, not only of the Philippine people when they were kind of excited about this woman and her husband. Mm-hmm. But you have to identify with her feelings. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of identify and go, yes, yes, that's so exciting, that's so exciting. And so you're kind of swept along, and I've had audience members come up to me and go, that was frightening, that was terrifying, because I found myself wholeheartedly endorsing this person that I knew I would never endorse.
And so many people did.
The play doesn't endorse the Marcoses, but it also is important for you to find a drummer who is really good at pulling us along.
Yes.
To say that the Marcoses are extremely divisive in the Philippines is to put it lightly. Ruthie, what did you think of Imelda Marcos before you were cast in the role?
What did I think of her?
Had you thought much about her? Had you
like I was saying
read
earlier,
the papers?
Well, no, I was very young, and I do remember there was all this hubbub. I grew up in Hawaii. There was this hubbub up with the Marcoses. But I mean, I was young. What I do remember about Imelda Marcos is just the pop culture references is on TV and in The Wedding Singer, you know. So So you hear about this woman, and when she comes out with the hair and the shoes, people laugh. I didn't know what that was about. So that's as far as I knew when it come to, you know, when it came to Imelda.
We have a caller who kind of knew Imelda. Christopher,
hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, Christopher.
Hi, we can hear you.
Okay, well, I think what happens is there is a delay, and people do not get that, and they're listening to their radio. You want to try again, Christopher?
I'm here.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so back in the late 80s, early 90s, the Filipino community used to put on these shows. It was a producer named Marcel Factura. And Imelda Marcos invited the cast and the crew back to her discotheque on the top floor of her brownstone building. And she sang for all of us, and the piano players, Ira Meltzer, and I accompanied behind her on trumpet. And she sang, what she loved was old show tunes. And what I remember, the song that she sang best, and she had a lovely voice, she sang the theme from Man of La Mancha. Oh.
To Dream the Impossible Dream?
Yeah. Da 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 da. That one.
Oh, it's and very appropriate. It's very appropriate.
And she was very good. And she was a very tall woman. Mm-hmm. Very, very tall woman. Like 6'3". I was amazed at how large she was. But a very gracious host, a very nice woman, you know, despite all the backstory. And there was a lot of backstory at that time. You know, this was after all of the, you know, the breakup and, you know, the whole
well, she was already in exile by then. Mm-hmm. I assume she was 6'3 because she was wearing very high heels.
She wore heels.
I don't think that you should feel bad about that, Ruthie Ann. Earlier this month, Imelda Marcos was reelected to a second consecutive congressional term in the Philippines. It's hard to believe considering what we know about her and her husband and what your show reveals.
Yes, it's a reminder that if we think we have short-term memories, mm-hmm. as far as politics and, wait a minute, you know, didn't this person just say this or do this, you know, 5 years ago? Yeah, if we think we have short-term memories, imagine what it must be like there. Yes, her children, two of the children, not all of them, two of the children are also in the government there, mm-hmm. holding quite high positions. It's something that's a little hard to wrap my head around.
Well, do we have knowledge of how complicit Imelda was in the worst crimes of her husband's regime?
It's really hard to pin down.
Did she serve the same role as Eva Perón did? Eva Perón really was a populist figure, but I get the feeling that, at least from your show, that Imelda, people started seeing Imelda as somebody who had forgotten her past, her as a poor person, and was now somebody who was just interested in dressing fancy and going to good parties.
I think I could say that the Philippines is a country where it's very class conscious, and there are a number of families who kind of are the very powerful families in that country. And her family, Romualdez, is one of those powerful families, but she was kind of from the poorer side of the family, and so always felt like she should have been accepted but wasn't. And I think that became an issue.
Well, early in the musical, you get a real sense of her ambition. Ruthie, do you think that Imelda Marcos is a person who is driven by a thirst for power, or was she just somebody who lucked out and this was an opportunity for her to indulge in the things that she enjoyed, clothes, parties, and the like?
I think she was attracted to people who had maybe not more than she was, who had a lot. You know, Ferdinand was already a senator, and she was attracted to that. And I think maybe whether it was intentional or not, it's kind of a way to look what they have and I don't have, what can I gain? Not in a manipulative kind of way, maybe subconsciously.
Uh-huh.
Like subconsciously.
Well, earlier in her life, she dated for a brief time Benigno Aquino, mm-hmm. who was from a very powerful mm-hmm. family. a political family as well, and he went on to become Ferdinand Marcos's chief political rival. After he was killed by Marcos, his widow wound up becoming the head of state, Cory Aquino.
It's very Shakespearean.
Yeah.
And it's like you couldn't make it up if you tried, but there it is.
How much of the songs which tell the story, how much of it is based on actual documents or speeches that were given?
Most of it. Most of it's based on speeches and documents and interviews and things that people said. Of course, they don't speak in rhyming couplets, but so I would kind of move around things to make them rhyme and fit the meter of a song, but a lot of it comes from especially the titles, things like Here Lies Love is something she said, and Please Don't, where she
wanted that to be on her tombstone, didn't
yes,
she?
Yes, yeah. So these are all quotes from them, from the characters.
When you heard that she wanted that to be on her tombstone, did you think, oh, gee, there's the title of my show?
Exactly. I thought, there's the title right there.
Marcos was elected president in 1965, but then refused to leave power. And he issued a decree called Order 1081, and that's the name of a song in the show.
Yeah, that was the decree that was declaring martial law. There was a lot of bombings and assassination attempts and things like that. Conveniently, just before his final term ran out, which allowed him to say, well, we have to restore order in the country. We're going to declare martial law, which means I have to stay in power. And there'll be censorship of the press, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to throw the opposition people in jail.
And I'll loot the treasury at the same time.
Yes, it allows all this kind of stuff to go on. Yes, it was a real tragedy that happened.
Now, Ruthie Ann, you'd done musical theater before. Had you done much singing of pop songs? Had you ever sung disco-type songs before?
No. I was definitely trained more in the Gershwin persuasion. So when it came to auditioning for David, they were like, you know, bring out your pop songs. And I was like, well, I have Audra McDonald. Is that pop? So Jordan and Heidi, our casting directors, were laughing at me. And they're like, well, let's see what we can do to, like, pop up that song. So I took this into them, and I was like, well, here's what I've got, you know. And they're like, never mind that. Let's just pull out some Imelda songs and
well,
give it a whirl.
Well, since she's perfect for the role, did you know immediately, David, that you were going to cast her as Imelda?
At the casting?
Yeah.
I think there was a little bit of talking, but no, it worked out.
Well, part of the problem when you're singing everything is that you have to create a character. And that's where the acting comes in, even though you're not acting in the usual sense. You don't want her to become a caricature.
Right, right. The wonderful problem is that this is a real person. You know, so I'm creating a character on somebody who already exists, which is the hardest thing I may have had to do on stage before. You can't make up things for her because she's real, and you have to give her you have to give them actors problems, right, so that they can fix them. But she has her own real problems, so definitely a challenge, but a wonderful challenge.
One of the lines you have is where Imelda says, "All world leaders from Mao to Reagan are essentially the same."
Mm-hmm.
What do you think she meant by that?
You talk with them, you get to know them, you become friends, and then a friend, you know, scratch my back, I scratch yours. And she, you know, she was definitely an ambassador. She got what she wanted. She got it done.
Was the fact that she had earlier dated Ninoy Aquino and then married Ferdinand Marcos, these political rivals, just one of those incredible coincidences of history? Or was she driven to people she thought would take her to the top?
I think she was attracted to people who had a sense of power, who she sensed were going somewhere, had more, slightly higher social standing than she had. She thought, okay, this is a step up. It actually takes me where I think I deserve to be. And, yeah, both of these guys had that.
Near the end of the show, Ruthie, after they have been ousted from power, Imelda sings a show-stopping song, Why Don't You Love Me? But since she just won her second election, I take it there's a segment of the Philippine population that still does love her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She's very loved in her hometown, kind of, you know, hometown hero kind of idea. And so you've got definitely pockets of people here versus there who remember the past, and you've got the Marcos supporters and you've got the activists. So there's definitely still divides, but she is loved and hated.
And you're seeing that as the helicopter is coming to take her away.
Right.
I lost count of the number of the times that the set was reconfigured. It's directed by Alex Timbers, who also did Bloody Andrew Jackson and Peter the Starcatcher. Mm-hmm. The biggest surprise for me was that there was no reference to Imelda's shoe collection. Is that something you you resisted?
Yes, it was something I resisted, and I was very grateful that the shoes were not discovered until the Marcoses were airlifted out. So 1 minute, or not 1 minute, maybe an hour after our show ends in real time, I'd say, that's when the shoes would have been discovered.
Then we can talk about the shoes.
Yes, but our show is over.
Right.
Just one more thing, David. What do you make of the launch of the new Citibank program? Are you a member?
Oh, the bikes. Yeah. I've used them, and they're in other cities, in London and in Montreal and Washington, D.C., and Minneapolis and Paris. I think it's great. I think I'm looking forward to when it reaches into other neighborhoods, deeper into Brooklyn and into Long Island City and Queens and other areas. And I think it can become this kind of breath of fresh air in the city.
Do you miss performing? I just saw you in a film that was about backup singers. And as far as I was concerned, the sequence that involved you and your backup singers was the highlight of the film. It was just so wonderful to watch.
Thank you. I haven't seen that film. I heard it's really good.
It
20,
is.
20 Feet from Stardom, yes. I think it's called, right? I haven't seen it yet. No, I'm still performing. Yes. I go out in a few weeks.
Well, definitely performing is Ruthie Ann Miles as Imelda Marcos in Here Lies Love, now at the Public Theater, running through the end of July. My great thanks to you and David Byrne, who's the force behind the Talking Heads and numerous other musical and artistic projects, and the creator of the show.
Thank you.